Chapter 79. No, really I never did, apostrophe replied Nicholas. You never saw my friend Glavormily, sir. Apostrophe said Miss Snevellicci's papa. Then you have never seen acting yet. If he had lived apostrophe, oh, he is dead, is he? Apostrophe interrupted Nicholas. He is, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci, but he isn't in Westminster Abbey, more's the shame. He was a well, no matter. He is gone to that bourne from whence no traveller returns. I hope he is appreciated there. Apostrophe, so saying Miss Snevellicci's papa rubbed the tip of his nose with a very yellow silk handkerchief, and gave the company to understand that these recollections overcame him. Well, Mr. Lillivick, apostrophe said Nicholas, and how are you? Apostrophe, quite well, sir, apostrophe replied the collector. There is nothing like the married state, sir, depend upon it. Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe said Nicholas, laughing. Ah, nothing like it, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Lillivick solemnly. How do you think, apostrophe whispered the collector, drawing him aside, how do you think she looks tonight? Apostrophe as handsome as ever, apostrophe replied Nicholas, glancing at the late Miss Pettiker. Why, there's air about her, sir, apostrophe whispered the collector, that I never saw in anybody. Look at her, now she moves to put the kettle on. There. Isn't it fascination, sir? Apostrophe, you're a lucky man, apostrophe said Nicholas. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe rejoined the collector. No. Do you think I am though, eh? Perhaps I may be. I say, I couldn't have done much better if I had been a young man, could I? You couldn't have done much better yourself, could you, eh, could you? Apostrophe with such inquiries, and many more such, Mr. Lillivick jerked his elbow into Nicholas's side, and chuckled till his face became quite purple in the attempt to keep down his satisfaction. By this time the cloth had been laid under the joint superintendence of all the ladies, upon two tables put together, one being high and narrow, and the other low and broad. There were oysters at the top, sausages at the bottom, a pair of snuffers in the center, and baked potatoes wherever it was most convenient to put them. Two additional chairs were brought in from the bedroom. Miss Snevellicci sat at the head of the table, and Mr. Lillivick at the foot. And Nicholas had not only the honor of sitting next Miss Snevellicci, but of having Miss Snevellicci's mama on his right hand, and Miss Snevellicci's papa over the way. In short, he was the hero of the feast, and when the table was cleared, and something warm introduced, Miss Snevellicci's papa got up, and proposed his health in a speech containing such affecting allusions to his coming departure, that Miss Snevellicci wept, and was compelled to retire into the bedroom. Hush! Don't take any notice of it, apostrophe said Miss Ledrook, peeping in from the bedroom. Say, when she comes back, that she exerts herself too much. Apostrophe, Miss Ledrook eked out this speech with so many mysterious nods and frowns, before she shut the door again, that a profound silence came upon all the company, during which Miss Snevellicci's papa looked very big indeed, several sizes larger than life at everybody in turn, but particularly at Nicholas, and kept on perpetually emptying his tumbler and filling it again, until the ladies returned in a cluster, with Miss Snevellicci among them. You needn't alarm yourself a bit, Mr. Snevellicci, apostrophe said Mrs. Lillivick. She is only a little weak and nervous. She has been so ever since the morning. Apostrophe, oh, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci, that's all, is it? Apostrophe, oh yes, that's all. Don't make a fuss about it, apostrophe cried all the ladies together. Now this was not exactly the kind of reply suited to Mr. Snevellicci's importance as a man and a father, so he picked out the unfortunate Mrs. Snevellicci, and asked her what the devil she meant by talking to him in that way. Dear me, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Snevellicci. Don't call me your dear, ma'am, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci, if you please. Apostrophe, pray, pa, don't, apostrophe interposed Miss Snevellicci. Don't what, my child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, talk in that way. Apostrophe, why not? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci. I hope you don't suppose there's anybody here who is to prevent my talking as I like? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nobody wants to, pa, apostrophe rejoined his daughter. Nobody would if they did want to, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci. I am not ashamed of myself, Snevellicci is my name, I'm to be found in Broad Court, Bow Street, when I'm in town. If I'm not at home, let any man ask for me at the stage door. Damn, they know me at the stage door I suppose. Most men have seen my portrait at the cigar shop round the corner. I've been mentioned in the newspapers before now, haven't I? Talk. I'll tell you what, if I found out that any man had been tampering with the affections of my daughter, I wouldn't talk. I'd astonish him without talking, that's my way. Apostrophe, so saying, Mr. Snevellicci struck the palm of his left hand 3 smart blows with his clenched fist, pulled a phantom nose with his right thumb and forefinger, and swallowed another glassful at a draught. That's my way, apostrophe repeated Mr. Snevellicci. Most public characters have their failings, and the truth is that Mr. Snevellicci was a little addicted to drinking, or, if the whole truth must be told, that he was scarcely ever sober. He knew in his cups 3 distinct stages of intoxication, the dignified, the quarrelsome, the amorous. When professionally engaged he never got beyond the dignified. In private circles he went through all 3, passing from one to another with a rapidity of transition often rather perplexing to those who had not the honor of his acquaintance. Thus Mr. Snevellicci had no sooner swallowed another glassful than he smiled upon all present in happy forgetfulness of having exhibited symptoms of pugnacity, and proposed the ladies. Bless their hearts! Apostrophe, apostrophe in a most vivacious manner. I love 'em, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci, looking round the table, I love 'em, everyone. Apostrophe, not everyone, apostrophe reasoned Mr. Lillivick, mildly. Yes, everyone, apostrophe repeated Mr. Snevellicci. That would include the married ladies, you know, apostrophe said Mr. Lillivick. I love them too, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci. The collector looked into the surrounding faces with an aspect of grave astonishment, seeming to say, this is a nice man. Apostrophe, apostrophe and appeared a little surprised that Mrs. Lillivick's manner yielded no evidences of horror and indignation. One good turn deserves another, apostrophe said Mr. Snevellicci. I love them, and they love me. Apostrophe and as if this avowal were not made in sufficient disregard and defiance of all moral obligations, what did Mr. Snevellicci do? He winked openly and undisguisedly. Winked with his right eye upon Henrietta Lillivick. The collector fell back in his chair in the intensity of his astonishment. If anybody had winked at her as Henrietta Pettiker, it would have been indecorous in the last degree, but as Mrs. Lillivick. While he thought of it in a cold perspiration, and wondered whether it was possible that he could be dreaming, Mr. Snevellicci repeated the wink, and drinking to Mrs. Lillivick in dumb show, actually blew her a kiss. Mr. Lillivick left his chair, walked straight up to the other end of the table, and fell upon him, literally fell upon him instantaneously. Mr. Lillivick was no lightweight, and consequently when he fell upon Mr. Snevellicci, Mr. Snevellicci fell under the table. Mr. Lillivick followed him, and the ladies screamed. What is the matter with the men? Are they mad? Apostrophe cried Nicholas, diving under the table, dragging up the collector by main force, and thrusting him, all doubled up, into a chair, as if he had been a stuffed figure. What do you mean to do? What do you want to do? What is the matter with you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, while Nicholas raised up the collector, Smike had performed the same office for Mr. Snevellicci, who now regarded his late adversary in tipsy amazement. Look here, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Lillivick, pointing to his astonished wife. Here is purity and elegance combined, whose feelings have been outraged, violated, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, lore, what nonsense he talks. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Lillivick in answer to the inquiring look of Nicholas. Nobody has said anything to me. Apostrophe, said Henrietta. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the collector. Didn't I see him? Apostrophe, Mr. Lillivick couldn't bring himself to utter the word, but he counterfeited the motion of the eye. Well, apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Lillivick. Do you suppose nobody is ever to look at me? A pretty thing to be married indeed, if that was law. Apostrophe, you didn't mind it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the collector. Mind it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Lillivick contemptuously. You ought to go down on your knees and beg everybody's pardon, that you ought. Apostrophe, pardon, my dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the dismayed collector. Yes, and mine first, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Lillivick. Do you suppose I ain't the best judge of what's proper and what's improper? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to be sure, apostrophe, cried all the ladies. Do you suppose we shouldn't be the first to speak if there was anything that ought to be taken notice of? Apostrophe, apostrophe, do you suppose they don't know, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci's papa, pulling up his collar, and muttering something about a punching of heads, and being only withheld by considerations of age. With which Miss Snevellicci's papa looked steadily and sternly at Mr. Lillivick for some seconds, and then rising deliberately from his chair, kissed the ladies all round, beginning with Mrs. Lillivick. The unhappy collector looked piteously at his wife, as if to see whether there was any one trait of Miss Pettiker left in Mrs. Lillivick, and finding too surely that there was not, begged pardon of all the company with great humility, and sat down such a crestfallen, dispirited, disenchanted man, that despite all his selfishness and dotage, he was quite an object of compassion. Miss Snevellicci's papa, being greatly exalted by this triumph, and incontestable proof of his popularity with the fair sex, quickly grew convivial, not to say uproarious, volunteering more than one song of no inconsiderable length, and regaling the social circle between whiles with recollections of divers splendid women who had been supposed to entertain a passion for himself, several of whom he toasted by name, taking occasion to remark at the same time that if he had been a little more alive to his own interest, he might have been rolling at that moment in his chariot and four. These reminiscences appeared to awaken no very torturing pangs in the breast of Mrs. Snevellicci, who was sufficiently occupied in descanting to Nicholas upon the manifold accomplishments and merits of her daughter. Nor was the young lady herself at all behindhand in displaying her choicest allurements, but these, heightened as they were by the artifices of Miss Ledrook, had no effect whatever in increasing the attentions of Nicholas, who, with the precedent of Miss Squeers still fresh in his memory, steadily resisted every fascination, and placed so strict a guard upon his behavior, that when he had taken his leave the ladies were unanimous in pronouncing him quite a monster of insensibility. Next day the posters appeared in due course, and the public were informed, in all the colors of the rainbow, and in letters afflicted with every possible variation of spinal deformity, how that Mr. Johnson would have the honor of making his last appearance that evening, and how that an early application for places was requested, in consequence of the extraordinary overflow attendant on his performances, it being a remarkable fact in theatrical history, but one long since established beyond dispute, that it is a hopeless endeavor to attract people to a theater unless they can be first brought to believe that they will never get into it. Nicholas was somewhat at a loss, on entering the theater at night, to account for the unusual perturbation and excitement visible in the countenances of all the company, but he was not long in doubt as to the cause, for before he could make any inquiry respecting it, Mr. Crummles approached, and in an agitated tone of voice, informed him that there was a London manager in the boxes. "It's the phenomenon, depend upon it, sir," said Crummles, dragging Nicholas to the little hole in the curtain, that he might look through at the London manager. "I have not the smallest doubt it's the fame of the phenomenon that's the man. Him in the great coat, and no shirt collar. She shall have £10 a week, Johnson. She shall not appear on the London boards for a farthing less. They shan't engage her either, unless they engage Mrs. Crummles to £20 a week for the pair. Or I'll tell you what, I'll throw in myself and the two boys, and they shall have the family for 30. I can't say fairer than that. They must take us all, if none of us will go without the others. That's the way some of the London people do, and it always answers. £30 a week, it's too cheap, Johnson. It's dirt cheap." Nicholas replied that it certainly was, and Mr. Vincent Crummles, taking several huge pinches of snuff to compose his feelings, hurried away to tell Mrs. Crummles that he had quite settled the only terms that could be accepted, and had resolved not to abate one single farthing. When everybody was dressed, and the curtain went up, the excitement occasioned by the presence of the London manager increased a thousandfold. Everybody happened to know that the London manager had come down specially to witness his or her own performance, and all were in a flutter of anxiety and expectation. Some of those who were not on in the first scene hurried to the wings, and there stretched their necks to have a peep at him. Others stole up into the two little private boxes over the stage doors, and from that position reconnoitered the London manager. Once the London manager was seen to smile, he smiled at the comic countryman's pretending to catch a blue bottle while Mrs. Crummles was making her greatest effect. "Very good, my fine fellow," said Mr. Crummles, shaking his fist at the comic countryman when he came off. "You leave this company next Saturday night." In the same way, everybody who was on the stage beheld no audience but one individual. Everybody played to the London manager. When Mr. Lenville, in a sudden burst of passion, called the Emperor a miscreant, and then biting his glove, said, "But I must dissemble," instead of looking gloomily at the boards, and so waiting for his cue, as is proper in such cases, he kept his eye fixed upon the London manager. When Miss Bravassa sang her song at her lover, who? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.